So how did the T-42 USD expedition to Havana, Cuba work out? You'll hear some answers in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with another rain report. The October 21st through 28th U.S. expedition to Havana, Cuba is now history. So just how successful was it both as a ham radio event and as a cultural icebreaker? The U.S. team leader was Jim Milner, WB2REM.
Well, it was a fantastic adventure, I'll call it. What we planned for happened and more. We had little bumps in the road, but those bumps were overcome given the complexity of our operation. It was highly successful. Our first bump in the road occurred coming into Havana through immigration. And when our packs of equipment hit the x-ray machine, the personnel working there immediately targeted as what they called contraband. We became a little concerned about that, but luckily we had a copy of our license on our cell phones and showed it to them, and they told us to wait for our luggage to come out and redirected us to the front of the airport where we met the chief immigration person who luckily had a list of our equipment. We had to do some explanation of what a bandpass filter was and a matchbox, and with my limited Spanish, I was at least able to communicate some of that. After about an hour and a half in the airport, we were able to leave. Once we got outside, the Cuban team leader, Bob, CM2KL, and Mr. Rodriguez, the president of their FRC, which is like our ARL, was out there to greet us and to take us back to our hotel. After just a few minutes at the hotel, we went right out to the T-42 U.S. site, which was located approximately 15 miles outside of Havana along the beach. Unfortunately, when we got out there, the antenna work had just begun because these houses are a throwback from, I think, the 1950s or 60s. They are now used as summer homes for rental by the Cuban people. Since we were coming out in the fall, the houses had to be fixed up before they were being able to be lived in. The antenna work went on and eventually got on the air about 6 o'clock that first evening. What we did notice initially at the site was there was a tremendous amount of noise level after the sun had set. We thought maybe it was from radar on top of the hills, but we found out towards the end of the operation that the salt water that was close by was affecting the power lines. And when moisture came in and the evening dew, the lines were sparking and causing static. That was one downfall in the operation. The next day, which was Thursday, October 22nd, this is before the contest, a Thursday, we went over and visited the FRC building, again, the Federation de Radio Aficionados of Cuba, to see their facilities. They're in an old house, old Cuban type of structure, which had a log periodic beam on a tower, a waiting room, a few offices, and a shack with equipment. In the back of the building, I found it very interesting because they had a garage sort of area, of which half of it was set up as a coffee shop, and so that the amateurs visiting there for about 25 cents or maybe even less could get a egg sandwich or a cup of coffee. And then there was another part of the garage where there's a parts room where people could go and buy parts or obtain parts for things that they were repairing. A number of Cuban hands were hanging around. They were soldering and taking old computers and recovering parts, and it seemed to be a lot of camaraderie. Everybody was extremely friendly. After taking a little bit of a tour of the city, we went back over to the shack and prepared for the contest, which was going to start on Friday. The 23rd. The 23rd started out as a fairly busy day. Before the contest, we would call made history in Cuba. We administered the first ever U.S. VE exams to Cuban hams. The problem is that we tried to consult with the ARL about whether those tests could be administered or translated in Spanish, but the cell phone communications out there were poor, and we lost connection, and we decided just to administer like anywhere else in English. The Cuban operators were quite limited in English other than Bob, CM2KL, and a couple other ones. So we gave 7 exams, and only Bob, CM2KL, passed as technician and then general. But he was the first, what we know, Cuban ham to pass a U.S. exam on Cuban soil. We had 2 forms of examination, and so we had planned that after the contest, we would have them study more and give the second form of the exams, and that would be done after the contest. The contest began on the 24th in the evening, at 00:24. We were immediately affected by the noise level. as the evening went on and the morning came about, contacts started coming in, and we worked extremely well together. It felt like that we had been a team for a long time. We had a five-element tri-band beam and a three-element tri-bander for 10, 15, and 20, and we had a two-element monobander for 40, but everything was makeshift sort of. I think the highest antenna maybe was 15 feet off the ground, but we were only about 100 yards from the ocean, so I don't think it really mattered. We obtained 4,100 contacts during the contest. We were unassisted because there was no internet at the site, so I guess it really didn't matter how high the score was. It was over 2 million points. It was the fact that we were able to pull this off in the way we did.
You mentioned problems with static created by the salt water splashing onto power lines on the beach after dark. During the day, was it a bit quieter?
There was some noise, but considerably quieter, about maybe 4 or 5 noise level. But at night, it would rise to 20 over 9. And depending if you're on 40, it was worse. And then 80, it was almost impossible. From what it was explained to me, the residue of the salt would go on the power lines. Something to do about the moisture at night would cause it to arc. The last day, we could actually see the sparks and hear it as we walked along the street. It was an issue that we had to overcome, and we were able to get through that. We also had other things happening during the contest that made it even more complex. On Saturday during the contest, we had a visit by the Cuban FCC chief. He wanted to visit the station and see how we were doing. In addition, he brought a vice minister. She listened to the headphones and enjoyed hearing the contacts as well. I think it was Saturday as well. We're interviewed by CO2KK, Arnie Coro from Radio Havana. Nancy, K9DIG, and myself were interviewed for broadcast worldwide. That was quite successful. And we also, Saturday, had an exhibition in which 40 local hams came out to the shack, and we presented a technology in ham radio, including remote linking and RFI interference. And it was very successful.
You're listening to a follow-up interview with Jim Milner, WB2REM, the mastermind behind the T-42US U.S.-Cuban de-expedition that took place from October 21st through the 28th in Havana, Cuba. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, will conclude this follow-up conversation with Jim in a moment. This is the Rain Report. Available 24/7 on therainreport.com, via Twitter at The Rain Report, and on iTunes.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
On Sunday, we had a children's demonstration. Some Cuban students came to the shack and also listened into the contest activity and were given an explanation of what ham radio was about. On Monday, we re-administered the VE exams. The Cuban hams, despite being up all night operating the contest, finishing on Sunday, they did all-nighter studying. Bob did some tutoring with a group and going over the questions, and 6 of them retook the technician class test, and Bob took the extra exam. We waited for everybody to finish, and then we scored each one after the other. And Bob was the first to be done and passed his extra exam on a different form. He said it was much more technical than the other one, which was more rules and that sort of thing. Even the other Cuban operators had said that as well. So one by one, we scored them. And each time we scored one that passed, there was a big cheer from us. And everybody hugged each other. It was a great experience. As it turned out, all 6 Cubans that failed the first time passed their technician, and Bob passed his extra.
Did you do any communications down there on VHF or UHF?
Oh, yes. I did try 6 meters daily around sunset. They had a 5-element beam on 6 meters, but they only work locally into Havana. I did operate on their 2-meter repeater. I think they made about 150 contacts on VHF and some HF with other Cuban stations.
You weren't able to take advantage of any of the DX clusters on the internet to promote where you were during the contest or during the week, what frequencies you were on. Did you find that not much of a problem?
For the most part, it was not much of a problem. If we were really going out to get the multipliers in the contest, that could have been an issue if we were out to win. We were out to do the best we could. Where it became an issue was on 60 meters. because their allocator frequency is somewhere around 5425, which is out of our band. This is the first time actually in history that Cuban hams were allowed to operate on 60 meters. This is monumental in itself. But the problem was is that we were transmitting on 5425 and listening on 5403.5. And there was no way to tell people where we were. They normally would not have listened up there. So what we would do is if there was someone back in the hotel where we could buy an hour of internet for about $5, we would call them on a cell phone and tell them to post it on a cluster and let them know that we were on this certain 60-meter frequency. And that worked well when we could do that, yes.
How many contacts did you make on 60 meters?
I think we made about 50 contacts on 60 meters. Now that we're gone from there, Bob, CM2KL, has put up a 60-meter antenna at his house and is starting to make contacts as well from his own QTH.
But he's having to transmit on
5425 and listen 5403.5, upper sideband.
It must have been almost like a time warp for the Americans.
Oh, yeah. We rode from our hotel every day to the shack, and a 1956 Bel Air says it all. The old cars are not an exception to the rule. There's no Kentucky Fried Chicken or McDonald's or anything like that. Some of the buildings are decaying here a little bit. There is some poverty, but the people are generally quite happy. Somehow we have a perception that everybody wants to leave Cuba, and that doesn't seem to be my perception. They have a lot of nationalism and pride.
Did you get any perception, Jim, of crime being less of an issue there because of the lack of technology?
I've been to places like Egypt where you go on the streets and you see people with machine guns protecting. I didn't see a huge police presence. I felt quite safe in the street walking around. And obviously, like anywhere else, there is crime. There are people that are asking for assistance on the street like you would find in any big city. The T-42 U.S. operation was met enthusiastically by everyone, from what I could see. We had a number of people that wanted to work us. It wasn't that we were in Cuba. It was just that the idea that we were able to put on a joint U.S.-Cuban operation and the hopes that there would be further contact between our two countries, I think. We didn't operate as a political entity down there, as I said before, but just an extension of a ham radio diplomatic mission, in that we wanted to establish a friendship between our fellow Cuban hams. The Cuban people are very nice people and very welcoming to us. I didn't pick up any negativity, any problems about who we were. We were like brothers, and they are very inventful and resourceful. They were using, actually, one of the interesting things, they had a Yaesu, I think it was FT 2100 kilowatts. We brought our transceivers, and we used their kilowatts, and the kilowatts are a bit beat up. I asked, you know, where did these kilowatts come from? And they said, well, they were used during the Angola War, and they're all rusted. But let me tell you, they occasionally broke down, and the Cuban hands kind of just threw it on the floor, opened them up, fixed them, and put them back in on the air immediately. So they have a lot of skill in working with electronics.
Would you go back?
I would say that 100% of our team members at the end said it was one of the most rewarding experiences, and I would go back in a heartbeat. It's a fantastic place. My problem was that I didn't have enough time, not even enough time to operate it much, because I was coordinating with Bob all the activities. So I would like to go back and really see things a little bit more and maybe travel around the country before things change, because the way it is now is the way it was. I'd like to see that a little bit more before it does change, because inevitably that's going to happen. On the 27th, we had our banquet. When all the activities were done and we were tearing down the station, we went to a restaurant near the beach. The operators and their XYLs, our operators, Mr. Rodriguez, the president of FRC, was there. And we had a fish and chicken and beef dinner there with all the drinks we could have. Mojitas, and Mr. Rodriguez was dancing the salsa. It was a great experience. We went out to the beach and with our banner and took a group photo, and it was a great ending to our T-42 U.S. story. I hope our relationship with Cuba continues to improve. They're taking it very slowly, and rightfully so. There are many issues that they're dealing with. I got to hear some of their side of the story and be able to compare it to our side of the story in order to make a more informed understanding of what happened in the past. It was a very unique and rewarding experience. I hope that I'll be able to operate down there again.
And that concludes our coverage of the now concluded T-42 U.S. U.S.-Cuban de-expedition. Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with team leader Jim Milner, WB2REM, both prior to and now following the October 21st through the 28th event. You can hear what led up to the T42US saga on the Rain Report archive page on therainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain. All rights reserved. Now, for all those who transmit these Rain Reports on ham radio nets worldwide, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73. The Rain Report is celebrating its 25th year in production. You can hear archives of the Rain Report on therainreport.com. We're also heard on Twitter at The Rain Report and via iTunes.